I've been trying. I say that a lot, and I haven't heard that in a narrative yet. This idea that everybody is necessary to the resolution of our conflict, of our stories, and of our karmic histories. Like you say, even the bad guys, they're necessary. Without them, there could not be resolution, because it would be forgotten, it would be invisible, we wouldn't know what it was that needed to be resolved, and they bring it to light.
Yeah.
And this for me is what enables a human response to align itself with a divine response to dissonance, because when you understand that the apparent bad guy is actually helping you see what needs to be healed and have a new response, because the process goes, you perceive or you experience, we respond, and then we choose again. And it's in that sacred process of responding and choosing again, where there's free will, that we change our stories, we change our reality, we make new permissions, we say no to some things and yes to the others. And we say it with our hearts, because it's not enough to always think no and think yes. Sometimes it's not pleasant, but we need to feel no and feel yes, as well as thinking it, you know, at the same time. And to feel it emotionally, and to feel it even in the body. You know what it's like? Every time we bring in, there's the head, and then there's a heart, and then there's the body. I know we're more than that, but every time we bring in a no and a yes from the head, if we then bring a no and a yes from the heart, there's another dimension. It's even more powerful in our reality. And then if we then bring in a no and a yes in the body, there's another dimension. And it's even more powerful in our reality. So these, we change the script of what can and can't happen, because together we agree what's possible. Together we're always co-creating the parameters, the limits for of possibility in our shared reality. And in our individual one, you know, but I love, yeah, and it's when you can understand that the bad guys are helping us all make a new choice to change reality from something we don't want to something we prefer a bit more. Then we can actually, when we're done being angry and desperate and upset and aggrieved, we can, all that's left is a celebration and a thank you. The notes of celebration and gratitude, and those divine resonances, well, gratitude invites more of loving. You know, it's exponentially always inviting in more of unconditional love. Celebration is what helps a story end. It's when we're celebrating that renewal is happening, things are changing, we're in that flow of life renewing itself. And when you can celebrate that the bad guys have existed, because you can see that they're helping renewal happen, that's when the story ends. That's when we literally step out of the story completely. That's when we know we're done with it. Like, we can't really cheat. We can't pretend to be celebratory while we're still angry.
Just like, okay, resignation would be the nope. Lowest kind of acceptance, not like, yeah, okay, I hate it, but okay.
Yeah.
The lowest kind of acceptance, not resignation.
Yeah.
And then there's like a different levels of acceptance, not? And celebration is like, whoa, fucking awesome. Hitler, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't got to that. I can honestly say I've never had that response to that one yet.
Yeah. That's the biggest embrace to reality, no?
Yeah.
I think it requires a high level unconditional love to get to embrace certain aspects of life, which are in the polarity of darkness,
let's say,
you know, be able to have that unconditional love for that darkness, all that it brings up. Well, is the life mastery. It doesn't happen like that.
No, it doesn't.
So,
it doesn't, and it's
okay just to have this level of acceptance. Okay,
Yeah. I like your levels of acceptance. I think that's a really beautiful map that you've got. You start off with like, okay, this has to happen. And then it's like, it's gradually, oh, this has to happen. And this is how I feel about it. And then it's like, well, this has to happen. And I'm going to make a new choice actually about. And then it's like, oh, this happened so that I can make a new choice. Oh, great that this happened, you know.
And I'm
Those are my...
Yeah, I'd say that there's like these different levels of acceptance. There's like a different, you know, this is like X, this is Y, you know. Like,
yeah.
But at a different dimension.
Yeah.
That is, okay, I accept it with that this happened with my mind. I am going to forgive this person. But the heart says, no, I hate it. I fucking hate it. But this does the mind, you know. Like, and I have that first intention. Okay. I'm good to accept it, but I accept it with the mind, and I accept these feelings that I really don't want it. But the heart is still like closed, not like, yeah, but there's no love.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's different levels of acceptance of different parts of our body that start coming in. First, maybe it's the mind, then there's emotional body, then maybe there's the heart, the very core.
Yeah.
Yourself saying yes to life, yes, yes, with him.
You know, when you say that and you get to the heart, and I would maybe name that like the sacred heart or something to point to the heart as in pure love, pure unconditional. You know, I just feel such relief. That's the point. That place within the self which can make peace, even with that which is, you know, almost seems impossible to make peace with.
Yes, because something that I notice when I'm resisting is that often there is some energy within us that is saying no to life. Mm-hmm. Somewhere there's a no.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's some big feeling that you are saying, okay, this comes from here. Mm-hmm. I have to say yes to this. Sometimes it is not so obvious.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really subtle. It's really in a deep layer of the unconscious that no, and it's not as obvious as to say yes, 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 yes to what?
Yeah.
There's just an energy we are not accepting. We don't know where it comes.
Yeah.
It's stuck to the body. And I think only the level of the heart is able to get all that we are, including all those energies.
Mm-hmm.
The mind cannot sometimes grasp where does this no come from. It doesn't even, it cannot even say yes, yes to what?
Yeah.
Some, I don't know, some deep grief that we carry within us, or some deep shame, or deep feeling are there as and it's just not enough to say yes with the mind or yes with the emotion.
Yeah.
Body. It requires a full opening in both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. And, you know, that's why I feel like the bad guys, as we call them, why they're so necessary to the picture of change happening. Because when the apparent bad guys stand on, they come on stage like a theatre play, like you were talking about, you know, and it's a theatre, and there they are being the villain, being the evil ones, doing bad things. And it's like only when there is it's like a whisper of the past, like an echo of things that have happened many times before in our lived history, in our ancestral history, in our shared collective genome, you know, the history that lives in our collective genome, that we've shared as culture, as a race, as a human race, this memory of all the bad things that have ever happened. And, you know, it just takes a villain up on the world stage to be acting out some of the things that just all they have to do is remind us to touch lightly the memory that vibrates in us, that we carry with us, that we inherit, of whatever ills or stories are ready to be released. And when we have that kind of replay you know, theatre replay of bad things that have happened in the past. The response, it touches, the clue when this is happening is when we respond to something and we find that our response is disproportionately emotional. It's way more emotional than we would expect it to be. Like we're having a super strong response to something that maybe doesn't really, if you just thought about it mentally, wouldn't deserve it. And that's always a clue that we're doing some really deep healing work. And I like that because, like you say, it's not enough in those instances to look with the eyes or to look with the eyes of the mind and go, no, I don't want this. Or, oh, this is the place in me that's dead to life because I'm hurting because I learned that life would hurt me in this way. You know, it's actually we need to feel the emotional vibration. And it's when these core original woundings happen, if I'm speaking now in terms of our interconnected fields and the resonances and dissonances of the energy in our fields, it's like when something, a trauma happens to us, a not love experience, an unloving experience happens, it's like it has an impact, and that impact sets up a vibratory pattern of dissonance in the field. Now that vibratory pattern is happening at the level where that pattern is information, and the information that's being sent to the system as a whole is dissonance is happening here. You know, and it's in the unique formation of the pattern, there will be an awful lot of information encoded about what is the nature of the bad thing happening, the dissonance happening here. Now, this affects our blueprint, this affects our DNA, and this affects this, you know, and I swear we inherit the memory. This information gets passed on. But it also gets shared. We have a collective consciousness. We have a collective blueprint for human consciousness. So without getting too intense with the technicalities I'm pointing to with all this, essentially it boils down to when things are in harmony, we have our rhythms and patterns in the interconnected fields of our consciousness that we each and all are moving within interconnected fields of consciousness, which everything is, they're in harmony. They have a harmonic resonance. They're generating waveforms which contain the information of one. You know, harmony is happening here. But where there is an inherited little packet, a pocket, if you like, a little orb of dissonance, it's like something bad could have happened to one of our ancestors, and we come in and the whole system is feeling as though the bad thing is still happening to us here. And of course, when we have dissonance, the system responds by trying to protect us from what's going on. It's like, oh no, there's a bad thing happening. Okay, well, it learns. We learn. We learn that reality can hurt us in this way. So we learn to shut down. We learn to close off parts of ourselves to the flow of life, and to keep them separate, to protect them. And it's only when someone comes along and plays the bad guy and reenacts something, it can be such a light touch. It doesn't have to be like the full historic reenactment, but it can be such a light touch. But it touches that place in us which got hurt, which has protective walls around it, which is essentially outside the flow of life. And suddenly here we are experiencing a pain that is connected to something that happened in our ancestry or in our early childhood or in our lives that we've just pushed down. And so often bringing a loving response to that pain doesn't require the wisdom of God, self-realized God consciousness. So often all that's really required is to feel the feeling and have a new to have that response and to make a new choice. To feel the feeling, have a response, make a new choice. And whenever we open to our feelings without trying to rationalize them, without pushing them down, without saying, well, I don't know why I'm feeling so strongly about this thing. I shouldn't be feeling so strongly about this thing. And we shut it down and judge ourselves for feeling, we're just delaying our own healing. But whenever we have a really strong emotional feeling and we welcome it and go, okay, this feeling is happening now. This feeling gets to be here now. I will give this feeling space. I will try not to give it a story. I will let go of that mental need to justify the fact that I'm having a feeling, then the emotion, the vibration, the dissonant vibration gets to move. It gets to finish a response which it never finished having when the original event happened. It gets to complete its response, and then it can vibrate out of the system. And you know, when it's done...
Something that I would like to add, because it's very relevant to this piece of information that you're describing, and which I love, by the way, is that I realize that emotions, well, they can come from many, many things, no? From our own life and things that have happened to us, from our ancestor line, from our past life karma, from many ways. But I would say all those emotions are somehow stored in our aura, in our field, and come up as, you know, like the stimuli connects something that is outside with something that is within.
That's right.
And this way of describing self-healing, I love it. I let it connect. And in a different level, I also see how we create our own emotions from a mental mindset.
Ah, yes.
This is how we structure our mind and our beliefs.
Yeah.
So sometimes we can create emotions which are not necessarily in our field.
Yes.
But because we have these thoughts, beliefs, structure in this way, we make a huge thing that maybe it doesn't even wasn't before there.
Yes.
So
nice.
I think it's fine art as therapist to know which part belongs to where. Which part are you creating it from the mind? Which part is already in the field? Because the part that we create with the mind is much easier to take it out.
Because it's a construct.
It's completely artificial. So it's just
This
part of rationalizing about the feeling is really valuable when it comes from the mind. Because if you rationalize it, then the mind can understand itself and saying, okay, this makes no sense. Okay, yeah, and then you place yourself in order and you no more feeling, no more overreacting to something, you know, but plain clear. This approach, it won't work with the other level of the information that is within our field, rationalizing. No. It's much more energetic, you know, love touching pain.
Yes. Oh my God, I love that. Because you're talking about rationalizing as actually a tool to introduce the self-reflexivity of the mind. So the mind's own ability to watch itself, to become the watcher of itself and say, hey, hang on, there's a hole in the logic there that's not making sense. Which is, I love that, because so often rationality and those mind mental processes, especially the ones of watching the mental processes, the one who watches, who's so helpful, they get thrown out. They can be thrown out, and actually they're critical. And it feels to me like a conflict to throw them out, because they're always there. They're always at work. So it's about putting them to work for us. It's about, you know, putting those mental processes to work and putting them into work in service to the heart's awareness.
Yeah, I gotta say though, it's usually a very muddy way of working. You know, working with the mind for the mind to observe its own processes and admitting its own wrongness, you know, wrong seeing or ignorance. It has to deal with the ego's huge resistance to changing the mindset.
Wow.
That's very often is structures that we place there to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if I had like a spirit guardian, you know, that you're entering a temple, the temple of this construct of beliefs, you know, and there's a spirit guardian saying, no, I don't want to see the truth.
Yes.
I just want this to stay as it is.
That's right.
So working with the mind, very often it can feel like this spirit guardian.
Yes, of course.
In place all this logic.
Yep.
And nothing goes on.
Yep.
You are trying to show something else, but this is not ready to see it. And that's why then you say, okay, you know what? Leave the mind that time. I don't want to live with the mind and think about it and rationalize it. This is useless. Let's go to the emotion and feeling. Okay. So it's not our work that we can always do as therapists.
Yeah.
I think it can only happen when somebody is truly surrendered to you as a master or a guru, wonderful life.
No, I understand. As a way show.
That you are an authority, someone I can trust.
Yep.
Someone who can show me the light.
There's just an agreement to be guided, usually, is what it's kind of like. Will you be guided in this process, in this setting, in this space and time that we're putting aside for this? Will you be guided by me here now? And because it's such a territory there. But, you know, the guardian is something that I meet so often in sessions. And the guardian is the one who he has a job to do, or she or they have a job to do. And usually, like you say, it's protecting a packet of thoughts and beliefs that have been constructed around something to keep something as it is, to keep a behavior or a set of responses, like you say, even emotional responses, you know, a construct that generates certain emotional responses to a situation. There'll be a guardian in us that whose job it is to maintain that. So they can be, I see them as a bit of an archetype within consciousness. But an archetype that you will find almost anywhere that you are allowing constructs to dissolve. And if you just wrestle with the guardian, you know, you come up to the guardian and go, hey, there's new information here. And, you know, you'll be there. You'll be fighting with yourself and tying yourself in. It's not going to go anywhere. But this is where including the mind, but not only working with the mind, as I know that you don't either. Like it's heart and body and mind all together, and actually coming from a place where you're helping somebody align with their sovereign consciousness, the I am that I am, the awareness, the part of them that's pure awareness. And it's like inviting that pure awareness into the arena so that when there's a new realization that happens in someone, where they're like, oh, hang on a minute, the bad thing isn't happening to my system right now. Oh, but I've got a guardian in the mind that's not letting me deconstruct the old thought patterns. There's a process of calling the guardian before the sovereign consciousness, before the self that's having the realization that the guardian isn't needed anymore. And this whole, like, something you can be ritualistic about this if you want, or you could be pragmatic, but the process is to call the guardian before that part that's guarding the old constructs, before the one that's having the awareness, and go, hey, thank you. You have done a super job. You are fully honored. You are celebrated. I needed you. You kept me safe. There's a new job to do now. I resign you from this job. There's a new one, okay? Could you turn everything round and support us doing this instead? That's your new job. And reassigning that guardian, you know, when it's really in the way and when it's... So, and that sovereign consciousness, yeah, that's...
This bit of a new job, because usually it was more like, okay, you can go and rest. And,
yes.
Goodbye, I just don't need you, I'm very thankful.
Yes.
But this is even better. This is like, oh, you're so awesome, please help me with this, which is where you are really needed. It's so much better. Really.
It's funny you say that. There's been times when it is literally about putting the guardian to rest and waving and there's no new job. And then there's other times when there really is a new job and you're like, hey, you're needed. This is what we're up to here. Oh man, well look, the only thing that was really like, there was a note coming through just everything we've been talking about now, and I just want to point to it, and that was that, for the fun of mentioning it really, is that, you know, when you're saying about, that it's hard work, you can take a lifetime's work to respond to the bad things happening with those divine responses of unconditionality, unconditional love, unconditional gratitude, unconditional compassion, or unconditional celebration. And the beauty behind that is that although it looks, when you're not feeling those responses towards something that's happening, it can look like you've got a mountain to climb before you could ever imagine feeling that way about what's happening, without pretending, without lying to yourself. Actually, you know, it's not that at all. It's an uncovering. It's not a process of climbing or reaching or striving. It's not about reaching for something we don't have. It's literally about almost, I would say, almost sitting back. You're being active and constructive, but you're also, part of you is like relaxing to go, okay, show me. Show me the pain.
Loving surrendering.
That's it. And it's like
surrendering. So you surrender to the moment and you love the process. Yeah. Surrender more. This is happening. You love it.
That's
keep
it.
On surrendering more of what's happening at every single being on. And it's happening. Everything. Mm-hmm. Inside, outside. And you love it even more. And you can go as deep as to reach God.
Yeah.
Not such a long time. You just keep on going deeper, deeper, deeper. And we know we can go very fast. And people who haven't meditated in their this life, even then, they are really willing to surrender and somehow guided to stay roaming. Mm-hmm. They can go so deep in such little time.
Yes, it is. You're so right. It's that surrender that allows us to drop in so deep, so fast. And yet, the deeper we drop, the more of the pain, the more of the what we don't want, the more of that comes to the surface. But the beauty is, if you're surrendering to the love, if you're surrendering and allowing those responses that aren't grateful, celebratory, compassionate, or loving, if you're allowing them to come, that's a form of surrender. So allowing how you really feel and how you really respond to be there, to be part of what's moving in the system, that's a form of surrender. Certainly it leads to surrender. It can open the doorway to surrender because it starts with acceptance. And every wave of not happy, don't feel good that we let ourselves feel, that wave, when it's moved, has moved forever. It's gone. Although another wave might come, it's gone. And actually that divine response that finally liberates us from a story that we may have inherited from our ancestors, or we may have had all our lives and be wondering, when the hey is this ever going to end? You know, it's like we face those waves of, not happy, don't feel good. And actually everyone we face will let us drop more and more deeply into what's waiting underneath. All of the responses we've had, they're like layers on top of the unconditional love, compassion, gratitude, celebration, and joy that we really are. And it's like all of those resonances, divine resonances that transmute, that dissolve us instantly, dissolve those stories, they're all in us. And it's like, I always see it that we've got layer upon layer of all these other stories and feelings and emotions that are on top of them. And sometimes we can just drop straight into that, I am the unconditional love I am. And sometimes we can't. We have to feel the, no, I'm really not. But either way, you know, you know, with authenticity, with honesty, brutal, absolute honesty, we're going to make more and more space for those divine resonances of, I am the unconditional love I am. What story? There is no story. I can't remember what the story even was. What do you want about? You know, and it goes.
The best. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I love how they put it in Buddhism. You know? Like, there's this wheel of samsara, no? That by our karma, that keeps on spinning. And we can, you know, try to, you know, see what makes the wheel move. Say, okay, this wheel of suffering moves because I have this thought that I am worthless. Okay, let's go with all the stories behind. Go story by story, seeing what keeps the wheel going on and on. Mm-hmm. And this is the work of so many lifetimes. And there's a radical way out. A radical way out. Which is exactly that.
Yeah.
I am existence. What wheel? Yes. What suffering? And if we can truly attune with that, then we are already free. And on the way, there's all these layers of disbelief. Oh, you are a person. What are you saying?
Yeah.
Haven't you bought the bread today from that shopkeeper? And are you? Are you
I was going to go home and cook. You're definitely human here, yes.
yeah, there's, you know, the way we were born, even this, the inertia of the society, of this mixed field we have with so many people who are dual atheists or dual disbelievers, awareness, that is seen as we are that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Have so solidly rooted in divine presence to not be shaken by the strength of the energies we are linked to.
Yeah, which are holding that narrative of we are not all that is, we are separate, we are alone in the dark, we're over an abyss, we can always fall, there's always, you know, we're little, we're small, and we're not love. You know, and those strong, strong narratives, because Earth is a playground for those narratives. It's a playground for consciousness to come and experience itself as individuated, as separate, and to explore all these different threads, these different notes of the song, colours of the spectrum, of, hey, what am I when I'm a red ray and I'm not connected to all the other colours? What's that like? Hey, I'm not you. And it's a real playground for experiencing I'm not you. Yeah, I'm really not you. And I don't even like you. Go away. You and blue, you know, we've got nothing to do with each other. So this is always a place where those narratives are really strong.
Yeah. We are moving as a species beyond all those borders. And it's still a long process. Yes, all these ideas about patriotism. No, I am America. America, first America. Border, you know?
Yeah.
Border between you and others. Not just that. Family, pride, political party, football team. So many identities.
Yeah.
Groups.
Mm-hmm.
I am this. Closest as from I am all.
I know.
There's a lot of layers there of separation.
We can use identity as a separation. I remember once this beautiful experience I had where I was lifted up momentarily outside space and time into what I later can only name as 12th dimensional reality, where I experienced myself within all that is, you know, all of us and everything I was connected to, as like a moving mandala of light and colour. And if you can imagine these multidimensional flowers of light and energy and pattern in motion, constantly interrelating, moving and turning, you know, in a dance of interconnectivity. And although each shape was distinct, it had a shape, it was a shape, it was distinct. It was also part of a dance of interrelationship where the way everything related was harmonious, it was fluid, and it allowed every shape to be the shape it was. Every shape had space to be the shape it was. Every shape fitted where it was. And it moved together. It didn't, none of the other shapes needed one of the other shapes to be a different shape, not to be there, to stop moving, to come and join it over where it, you know, the difference. There was identity, but there was oneness, and it was a dance. And it's, I love it because it reminds me of something my mama said when I was little, and she said this about friendships. And she said, oh, Lucy, friendships are like, you know, the wheels in a clock, cogwheels turning. She said, you're like a cogwheel with all these different spokes, and your friends are like wheels all around you with all these different spokes. And sometimes you'll turn with one person, one part of you, and then sometimes you'll turn with another person, another part of you. And she said, you're all moving together. And, you know, I've always loved that because I feel like it allows for me to have identity, which makes me feel safe. I have a belonging, but I don't need to use that belonging to keep me separate. I don't need to say, because I'm a Lucy, I am not connected to all of you. It's like I have a definition. I have a shape that I am, but I also see that I am breathing with all that is. There is a constant flow. There's a boundary that gives me shape, but there is, it's not a wall. It doesn't cut me off. I'm always flowing with everything I'm a part of. I'm breathing it. It's breathing me. We're exchanging molecules. You know, wherever you look in physics, you can see we're constantly exchanging, constantly renewing. We're not static and we're not isolated. And yet we have these identities. And it's, I feel it's okay to have both. But when you use your identity to go, ha-ha, I'm right and you're wrong, or you're totally separate and I'm going to come over there and I'm going to, you know, it's just like, oh God, are we still doing this? Can we stop, please?
Think of identity, it's obviously here, you know, obviously, then, you know, highest guru, you know, I speak of anyone, you know, Meher Baba or Christ or anything, they all have their own identities, because, you know, something, some form was there, and there was, you know, some mixture with his body and mind, you know, and something says, okay, here, there's an eye.
Yeah.
And that idea that, hey, there's an eye here, it's really powerful somehow, you know, it is in us, that idea, there's an I here. So it's not to say that doesn't exist, you know, that doesn't make us join with or merge with Christ consciousness. That I is part of the I consciousness, because there's a minority that says there's an I. But how hard do we want to get into that identity that there's an I? Maybe there's an I, and who the fuck cares? You know what?
Exactly. You know,
there's an I, so well. And I think not grabbing to that I is what helps us be more, allow us to merge with the reality that we are much more.
Do you know, I was feeling like when we've lived in a very disconnected, with a lot of us have been exploring disconnectivity for many lifetimes. And when you, I think when I feel like I'm disconnected from everybody else, that's when I have to compensate for not having belonging, for not having connection. And I make my safe place this identity, this island. It's like, well, if I'm not part of everything, I'm going to defend my boundaries. And I'm in a... Whereas when I have that sense of, oh, I am part of everything, part of my system relaxes, it feels really safe, it recognizes, remembers it has belonging, and that belonging is unconditional. I don't need to be or do anything in order to belong. I am consciousness, I have a place here, I'm connected with everything, yada, yada. And then I don't need to, I don't need to cling to my identity as what gives me safety, as what defines me, as what keeps me. I think I'm.
Yes, I get you. There's this book that I read, and I really recommend it, The Continuum Concept, from an author called Jan Lindo. And
beautiful.
She's this American, amazing life. You know, she does her biography and she was a full adventurer, woman who ended up in the Amazon, the Venezuelan Amazon, living with indigenous tribes for 5 years. And she became on her way very spiritual. And some moment of the book, she says, and there's this tribe where there's just so many enlightened people here. It's just amazing how many guys are really, and she is attuned enough to realize when someone has some level of enlightenment.
Yeah.
So she describes this indigenous tribe, and some others, they say, she says, also there are tribes where there are many guys who have that. But she describes a specific tribe, but there's just so many of them.
Mm.
And I think it's very related to this, like you say, I think in this indigenous tribe, sense of belonging, it's a given.
Yeah.
You are raised by so many others, and if the tribe is really attuned with nature and with her own continuum, that's what tries to describe the concept of a genetic continuum.
Yeah.
We are meant to be.
Yes.
And we discover and we respect it, then we are just attuned with life.
Yeah.
Right, so. And I think in indigenous tribes it is easy. And in our societies, it's really hard because we have a super strong sense of identity, super strong island with its culture. I think you described it very well.
And our culture and the way we live, the whole of civilization is based on the premise of separating oneself from one environment. You know, it's being a victor over the environment. So winning as though you've got to make a war against the world you're living in and conquer it, conquer the environment and control the conditions. So all of our homes, our houses, our systems, our infrastructures, our businesses, our commerce, our power structure, all of our structures, our civilized structures have within them this kind of concept of success is equated with conquering your natural environment. Whereas if you're looking at tribes that live in a natural environment. Well, natural environments are a demonstration of interconnectivity working in harmony with itself. So if you're a tribe, if you're a human being that includes itself in that picture of interconnectivity, you know, that wisdom is you. You are the wisdom. You are a living embodiment of the wisdom of interconnectivity. You haven't done what a lot of us have done in the civilized world and put all this stuff in the way. And here we come back to this process of enlightenment and realization being a process of getting rid of the layers that are in the way.
Yeah.
And that oneness actually being what's waiting for us when we just get out of the way and we get out of the way and we take away what we've put in the way of what's always waiting to show itself. You know, it's in us, it's in our world, it's there if we're ready to see it. And if we just kind of find all these amazing different ways we find to navigate beyond the layers, the stories, the constructs, and that desperate, you see it in people, that desperate drive to, I've got to break free from civilization and go and live in a van for a year. I need to go and live in the hills. And we've got it here as well, like the community up here in the hills, which is just like, for me, the best example of people dematrixing and landing quite roughly sometimes and just going, right, here I am, a body in some trees. Now what? You know, it's like, that's quite a brutal process to go through. But the call to do it is so strong. You know, we get to a point where we're like, enough. I need to remember who I am.
Yeah. I think something that I find really interesting is that here in the West, there's such a super strong sense of worthlessness inside each and every one of us.
Wow.
I think it's almost general that as we are raised, in the way we are raised, we come up with a sense of worthlessness. I am not enough.
Yes.
Or I don't deserve love.
Not enoughness.
You know,
yeah.
Almost everybody, or if not everybody, I think it's because of the very way we are raised. We are like when we have experience and it but not we are constantly corrected how we cannot be, that in our childhood it just has the sense that there's so many aspects of us which are not okay.
Yeah.
So that means I am worthless at this part. And having this strong sense of worthlessness makes us start the search of how to be worthy.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm worthless. How can I be worthy? That's when we start creating an identity. Because to be worthy, I have to become this. And, you start when we are teenagers, there's some funny choices. Is it funny nowadays, how to be worthy? But it's that search. And we just refine the search as we grow up. But we are constantly looking for worthiness. Because we have that stain
within
the back of our soul. And every time we make a choice in order to be worthy, from believing in our unworthiness, then we create a stronger sense of identity.
Yeah.
That is something more that we'll have to get rid of.
Yes. Yes.
It links so well with this that you are saying, people who have tried everything in their identity, okay, I'm going to become this. A businessman, super successful. No. It doesn't work. No. Sporty, I'm loving, no, I'm still sad. No. I'm going to be spiritual. No, damn it. Also, it doesn't work. Eventually, it's like,
yep.
I'm so tired of all these layers. What can I do to just, who am I?
Who am I beyond all this, underneath it all? What is there waiting for me always? I love this. This unworthiness is part and parcel of those civilized structures where we separate ourselves from the world we live in. It starts with the body separating itself from the world it's a part of. And it's creating conditionality. Love can be withdrawn. Parents can withdraw love. Friends, family, people can withdraw love. It depends. It's conditional. Love is conditional. Food is conditional. Unless you do this, you won't have the food. Comfort, it's conditional. Having your basic emotional needs met, physical needs met, and beyond that, all of your needs met. It's all conditional. And of course, we're in a created environment. We created an environment which has conquered our natural environment, is disconnective. And in order to survive in that, in order to learn how to create, how to get our needs met and how to create the experience we prefer, we learn all about conditionality. So how to, and it starts from, like you say, believing we're not enough. I am not enough. I haven't got enough. I haven't done enough. I must do more, be more, have more in order to become and create the experience I prefer. And it starts as striving from a place of not enoughness, of lack. And of course, when we do that from lack, we have to control. We're always trying to control our environment. Well, the minute we're dealing with conditionality, I have to do this so that this happens. If I don't do this, this won't happen. And we create all these kind of scenarios for ourselves to explore, almost going against our natural environment, our natural instincts, our natural impulses, what we want to do. So in the end, we within an environment which is about conquering the natural world, we end up as a consciousness in a body, an environment of the body, a vehicle, which is about conquering our own body, as a consciousness learning to conquer our own body. So I'll conquer my physical impulses. We'll make them wrong. We'll put them to one side. I'll conquer my emotions. I'll control how I respond and what I respond. Or like you say, I'll generate emotional responses so I can respond in a controlled emotional way. And we have all these constructs, which are like towers. You know that the tower card in tarot is always, if you just keep building a tower upon a tower upon a tower upon, it's going to collapse. It's at some point those constructs are going to come tumbling down. And it's why so often breakdowns are called breakthroughs, and overwhelm is actually a sign of great transmutation, emergence, and ascension, potentially. But these moments where our constructs come tumbling down can be so unkind, and yet they can lead us to that, what we're really calling for, which is, who am I beyond all this?
Yeah. I like how in many traditions, the way for enlightenment, the master is just slapping strongly, or knocking, you know, full strength punch, or blah, something that you would say, wow, where's your compassion as a master? Like, you've lost it. Hey, what? This is enlightenment? What? You know, I think it's very related to life giving us a huge slap by giving us a divorce, the death of our parents or son or I don't know, being fired, any moment that is just like, wow, and in that confusion where you don't know where to clean yourself to,
and that's where it's become something you've spoken of before, and I love the way you worded this. And it's like, when you have that initial shock, I would not choose personally to then progress along my path of awakening and increasing awareness by calling in shock after shock or punch after punch. Like, I get to a point very quickly where there's, hi, I don't want to progress that way. Could we do this more kindly and lovingly, please? Otherwise, I'm going to be on my, you know, I'm going to be really bruised here. And that's when calling for love, calling for compassion, calling for kindness leads us to grace. And there's this, when you're on the wheel of karma, cause and effect, and we're learning by, happy, make, feel good, want more, bad, not feel good, want less, you know, on that wheel of karma, cause and effect. What breaks the wheel is when we're dropped, I would say divine intervention, where we have this beautiful moment or that calls us home to grace, that drops us into that awareness of, oh, hang on a minute, I am the I am that I am. And that can happen in those moments of confusion that you're talking about. Now, when it's happened, the part of the system that registers, oh, hey, hang on a minute, everything else is just a story. I'm going to go back into the story and forget this moment in a minute, and I don't want to, but I know I am. But it's had it. It's remembered. The system has remembered. And so it can continue to call for more of that. Or, can I please call more grace into my experience? Can I please... And every calling for, can I please have a more graceful experience, is a very powerful choosing what to be with. Because there's always the collapse of the old and the emerging of the new, or the now, or the who we are beyond all our constructs. Allowing that to emerge in this area of who we are. That area of our life, our relationships, our love, our work, our domesticity, how we feel about things, all of our thoughts. It's like we're always inviting that who I am beyond all this to emerge and reinform who I thought I was and I don't want to think I am anymore, and dissolve those constructs. So there's always collapse and dissolve. Now, collapse is where we're in the tower while it's falling down, going, ow, oh my God, no, I don't want this. This is horrible. We will progress, but we'll get damaged in that picture along the way, and we'll have to heal from that. Whereas dissolve is when we're, oh yeah, I'm not that. I choose to be with what I am. What's more real? What's more true? What's more loving? What's more kind? What's more compassionate? And that choosing what to be with means that the old will continue to dissolve. And sure, we're never going to not have to face our feelings, but we invite ourselves to rest in and sit with and bring our attention into the ever-expanding love of harmonious experience that's the manifestation of the I that's beyond all this, that knows itself in interconnectivity.
And as the tower comes down, and there's so much panic, you know, survival, I am going to die.
That's it.
That intention. worst fears coming up. Very often, the sense of dissolution becomes almost as an intellectual wish.
That's an idea, yeah.
More than something we can truly attune as we are touching those huge emotions. It's almost as if those emotions are bringing us to the earth. Nah, you cannot go to the sky.
Yes. You will come here and feel this.
Sky, emptiness. No, pain. Solve this. So that's when it's hard. No, that's the dark night of the soul.
Yes.
When we've experienced a place of unconditional love, and we know it's here, that we still have towers within us, and one of these towers, God puts with his finger and says, "No more tower."
Yes.
Dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
You know you are not. You know you are divine. You know you are God, but you are not able to fit it with this huge density of no to life.
That's it.
And that's it. That's the hard part.
Yeah. And I don't think it matters how enlightened you become, that if as long as there are stories to dissolve, there's always that possibility of falling fully into the experience of the collapsing tower. Now, I'm not sure it's fair to say, it's not a marker. You can't measure, I don't think, enlightenment in that way and say, oh, well, if you're having a dissonant experience or if pain has become real for you, that means you're not spiritual. It's like, well, actually, possibly the opposite is true. The deeper you realize the love that you are, the more intense those stories of being not love you're going to face. And the stronger they are and the more powerfully they can call us into forgetting ourselves and falling all the way into them and just becoming that tiny self in the abyss suffering. You know, and it's just like, I have this, for that, there's this, when I'm, there's, I always think of it like in the heart gateway, the gateway to the heart, in the system, it's almost like there's a doorway and there's things leaving and there's things coming in. And sometimes what's leaving is so big that it's stuck in the doorway. It's too big. I can't be with what's coming in. I'm just with this horrendousness that's showing itself here now. And I have at those moments almost like, oh, and I wish I could remember this in those moments, but it seems forgetting is so strong and always able to return in amazing ways. And which means remembering can return in amazing ways. But when I'm forgetting, there's this, okay, am I aligned and resonating as the love that I am? Yes, wonderful. No. Okay. Can I call to it? Can I receive? Can I ask and receive from the love that I am to help me, please? And acknowledge. I've got some awareness here and I can acknowledge I need help and I'm a bit stuck here. Yes, fantastic. No, okay. Can I remember that the love I am exists somewhere? Yes, okay, great. And if the answer is no, then I've totally forgotten about the love that I am. I'm not even asking any of these questions. I've just fallen into the experience of, it doesn't matter, because it does matter, but I'm still the experience. I always meet it like a wave, like it's going to wash me home to shore. You know, it's not there forever. It's not here to create in my future. It's here to heal. Something is leaving. I've fallen into the wave and I've got stuck in that churning wave that's crashing here, but it's going to leave me on the shore of my heart. I will come home. It's just going to wash me back to the shores of the heart. I've just got to go along for the ride, you know, and here we are back to, I've got to feel what I'm feeling, face it all, and I can't control this. And sometimes for me that happens to remind me that I'm not in control.
So something, you know, because it's so recent, this tower that that fell for me, you know, as separation from Nuria happened.
Yeah.
The thing I realize is when we are in that we're collapsing, you know, and we are looking for love, because we always are. We somehow, you know, there's a part, I wish, you know, like a part of us that just can't remember. You have so many tools and you're going to grab whatever you can. Maybe one day you're not going to be able to sit down and connect with God the Divine and bring so much light to your soul and have this wonderful bath, you know, total bliss. Maybe you know, you're vibrating here, that's there.
Mm-mm.
No way.
Yeah.
Too far. But maybe you can have a cup of chocolate and enjoy it.
No.
That's okay, something. Okay, you say, okay, I like this. Okay, that's okay.
Yep.
You know, maybe that's all you can do one day. Maybe you can just have a shower, you know, a nice shower and enjoy it. Okay.
Yes.
That's awesome. You know,
yep.
All the rest of the day watching Netflix and crying.
Yep, absolutely.
But that's still okay, you know, it's part of the process. You're going to hang on to the light. Because one part is always wanting love.
Yeah.
That's why we don't kill ourselves when the tower is collapsing. One part knows.
Yeah.
There's a way for love, reach for love. And it's going to do it, you know, it's a process, you know. And as it comes up, you know, it will reach for higher tools, you know, that are resonating in this area. You know, okay, maybe here I can go and speak with a friend, you know, and really tell everything out.
Yeah.
Oof, okay, and I get comprehension. This is awesome. Okay. Maybe here I can, make some yoga, you know, come back to the body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just be okay here. And as we come up, we reach for higher tools.
Yeah, exactly.
So sometimes I've treated people who are depressed. And what they can do is just very, very low level.
Yep.
Cook for yourself today. Today you're going to cook for yourself.
That's right.
You're going to cook and you're going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's your reach for love.
And I love that you can point that out, and it's so important. And I remember indeed my own time when I was like this, when I actually, it was a proud thing to be able to say, I got out of bed today and I got dressed. And I that was actually a major achievement. There was a time in my life I was so ill, I was so debilitated, I had such a serious experience and condition going on that if I could get out of bed and I could get dressed... What helped, and it was friends. Like, I had a friend who would come and visit me, and she would just come and sit with me, and that was enough, you know. And I would have learned to celebrate myself for these tiny achievements. And you know, I had two options. I could look at that and go, oh my gosh, I got out of bed and that's all I did. And it was my friends and loved ones who said, hey, you can celebrate yourself for this. That is a big achievement. And when I started doing that, and I chose what reaction to have, I chose to respond to myself with like, wow, yeah, okay, that's good. Then I realized it grew and it grew and it grew. It didn't suddenly magically fix everything. But the more I celebrated, the more I amplified the yesness, I can-ness, and it helped me heal. It helped me grow. It helped me do more. Like you say, and it helped me get to the next level of like, okay, now I can cook for myself, or now I can have a bath. And, you know, we can so empty and hit the deck so hard that those tiny things that we, you know, another person might take for granted are mountains of achievement. And yet, whatever we choose, this is about choosing what to be with. If we choose to put, what we choose to place our attention with, we amplify always. So when the tower is collapsing and dissolving at the same time, we can choose to, how we choose to respond determines where we choose to place our attention. And that will amplify and magnify what's happening in our reality. So if we're consciousness going, well, I don't like this and I'm scared of how it's happening, everything's terrible and oh my gosh, the will of the divine that lives in us, that is us, all of consciousness is going, oh, are you exploring negativity? Yeah, sure, of course you can. Okay, we'll amplify this. because that's what you're giving energy to. We're actually giving the energy of the divine, of one consciousness, of all that we are, which is phenomenal. We're giving the energy of all that we are to whatever we place our focus of our attention on. Whereas if we can, and sometimes we're doing that, and there's a good reason for that, and we'll grow and learn always, but we're growing and learning that way. And other times...
Very often it's unavoidable, what I feel.
Yeah.
Very often.
Yes.
It's unavoidable, you know. Something comes, and you and I have many of those days where this strong emotion comes, you know.
Yep.
Strong. I don't know, like heavy weight comes out of somewhere. Who the fuck knows? But there's a heavy weight within the body.
Yes.
That is a no to life. No.
It's, that's right.
No.
And
you can say anything, but I'm still here. And this is no.
Yeah.
Okay. There might be a part of you that says yes, yes, yes. But inside the body, there's like strong no.
Mm-hmm.
And my experiences. Sometimes it just takes some time for this big no to, you know, start getting a bit more soft on the edges, and then slowly, it can take days, for me it takes days.
Yeah.
There's a strong no. And there's absolutely no magical one, you know, I have a story that says, ta-da! When I'm here, I get this magical one.
Yeah, and make it not be happening. Yep.
Sometimes, if I make a meditation and I am playing a guided meditation of some guru who is here, up here,
mm-hmm.
and I'm there, and I'm doing the meditation, and so much, there's so much resistance, I find that, but still,
yes,
getting me higher. And I dissolve it, thanks to connecting with that.
That's it.
Sometimes it happens, but very often...
we just go through it.
Yeah, if it's really strong, it takes a long time meditating, really dissolve.
And this is it, this is... what this kind of brings us round to that, those parts of us that we were saying at the beginning, those parts of us that are dead inside. And it's almost like the bad feet, like, and when we can celebrate the bad guy for helping us have those responses that help us move those things which are hidden in us. Those, and it's almost like those bad feelings are a bit like the bad guy on the stage, the world stage, being Mr. Evil. You know, and it's like when those feelings come, and no, we can't just skip to enlightenment. No, we can't just pretend that they're not there. We can't make them not be happening. We go all the way into them, and it's like we become them. So we go from being vast, infinite beings where this feeling is like an invisible dot. And it's like it switches round. So we become like the tiny invisible dot, and the bad feelings become this vast universe completely enveloping us. And when that happens, it's quite often I find in myself when I have that experience, it's because what wants to move, the bad feeling in me, the... is actually a buried emotion, a buried response to a trauma event, an old pain, an original, an experience of not love that's happened in my ancestry, in my physical life experience, or, you know, whatever. It's in me. And it's still vibrating in my system. There's a little pattern of dissonance still vibrating in my fields, going ow, 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 really, really so much ow, you know. And it's because it won't shut up and it won't go away. I've hidden it. I've buried it. I've gone, well, shut up. I can't do anything about you, so I'll hide you. And it's so hidden and so buried that you wouldn't, or it's so intense that you would not get me to consciously, willingly, go and open Pandora's box and go there and go, okay, how are we feeling here, kids? You know, I don't want to do that. And sometimes life will go, well, this doesn't want to be in your system anymore. So that pattern is starting to really make a fuss. Like I'm starting to feel it. It's getting more active. It wants, something in me wants to transform, but I'm there going, nope, don't, I'm not, look, go away. I'm not doing it. I really, honestly, do not make me do this. And something comes along and it just, I have, I, it triggers me. This is when I get triggered, and this is when I fall into becoming that tiny speck where the bad feelings are like the infinite universe, and I'm this tiny speck, totally overpowered by them, and I had to go through them. And it's because I just wasn't able to reach that, you know, I can't even see the guru in me or out there or anywhere, you know, and it's like, oof, you just have to go through it and feel it. And it just wants to vibrate its way out of the field, you know, but I've got to go through it. I've got to go into it. And man, I hate it when that happens. And inevitably I get like a certain period of time into the process. I'll be able to rest again or open to that vibration of oneness awareness, either in a friend or myself or wherever it comes from. And I'll look back and go, hey, did I forget that? How did I fall into that? Like, how did I let that happen again? How could I forget, you know? But it just needed to be that way. There was no other way to let that move. And
yeah, that's it. That's
time was it. Up. And it was on its way out.
Really, that's the matter, you know, when we are vibrating here, you know, higher up, not so far from unity, from love and all that.
Yeah.
We can tell ourselves like, okay, just remember this. Remember it's a process. We go away. Just, you know,
yeah.
Consciousness developing on its own. Eventually, yep. You know, you're going to go out. You know, you can tell yourself anything when you're here. When
yeah.
You're there, that's not the kind of thoughts you attract.
Nope.
You're never going to remember that.
Nope.
So it really doesn't matter, you know, all that you wish to protect yourself with good thoughts for the future.
Yeah, it's not going to work. That's bypassing. That does not work.
What you did when you were there.
Yeah.
You were there. Okay, what did you do? And it was okay. Remember, I went for a walk. It was okay.
I love it. This is why I feel we need each other. Or it's just so beautiful to be, not to depend on each other, not to need each other, but really to celebrate our interaction and to recognize, well, I'm not an island. And when I'm forgetting, I want my friends and my loved ones to help me remember who I am. And it reminds me of this story, this myth, this legend, this story of the, with all these stories, always about tribes, you know, tribes people somewhere in a distant land, far away from our civilized world, remembering how to live in nature, you know, and or close to the earth, or they haven't forgotten who the hell they are in the earth. And one of these stories about an African tribe is that when a brother does wrong, they take him into the circle, and instead of punishing him or casting out, they tell him everything good about himself. They remind him of who he really is. Another is when a child is born, the mama, she sings the song of that child. Or when the child is conceived, the mother will go and she will listen and she will hear and then she will sing the song of that child. And then when the child grows up and has difficult times, not just the mother, but all of the tribe will sing the song of that one back to them. Yeah. This is who you are, child.
Strong.
Yeah.
Strong.
This is who you are. And it's that remembering. So helping each other remember.
Yeah. Yeah, good to be in your tribe.
Oh, brother, thank you very much. Oh, my God, I love chatting with you. Thank you for that. I never know where we're going to go when we open.
So much. And I have such a good time.